and you're very welcome to another episode of Sparking Change. I'm Dil Vikramasinghe. Thank you for taking the time to catch up with the latest social justice and mental health stories as we speak to those who are affected by the issues and hear from the change makers who are making a real difference, all with the view, of course, to inspire you to be part of the change. Please remember to subscribe, rate and review us, and do get in touch with the show by emailing us on sparkingchange@headstuff.org or follow me on Twitter @DilW or the show @SparkingChange1. Now, a word from our sponsor. Our mental health is our most precious resource. How we feel about ourselves plays a big part in the job that we have, the quality of our relationships and our resilience to cope with the challenges of life. Insight Matters provides inclusive and affordable mental health support services with a dedicated and talented team of 45 psychotherapists. Call us on 01-891-0703 or visit insightmatters.ie and start your journey of self-discovery. If you'd like to advertise on Sparking Change and reach thousands of engaged listeners, do get in touch. 1 in 5 Irish people say they care for or are related to someone with mental health problems. Ireland has the 4th highest teenage suicide rate out of 31 European countries, and clinicians and psychologists are increasingly looking to find a better way of combating this mounting mental illness epidemic. Lulu Rose is the creative partnership of Louise Shanahan and Rose Finity. Together, they aim to promote positive mental health for children through creativity and the arts. Lulu Rose believes passionately in nurturing children's mental health through the creative and fun method. Their first children's book, It's Always There, concentrates on the mindfulness of breathing meditation and body meditation. Where Is Happy concentrates on self-compassion, kindness and self-esteem. And Look Who's Here deals with emotions. The Lulu Rose series is beautifully written and illustrated and are essential reading for young ones so as to help them gain the tools to look after their own mental health, which will undoubtedly help them to become happy, healthy and compassionate individuals. Well, joining me now on Sparking Change is psychologist and mindfulness teacher and author of the Lulu Rose series, Louise Shanahan. You're most welcome on Sparking Change.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, just to let our listeners know, we are sitting in Mountjoy Square. It's a beautiful sunny day, and we were meant to be actually recording this interview in Inside Matters, but we thought it's not often that we get a nice sunny day, so we might as well get out into the park. And we are talking about mindfulness after all. So, yeah. Louise, tell me a little bit about, first of all, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. It's nice to see the sun shining as well. So,
And tell me, do you do mindfulness on a daily basis? Is it integrated in your day-to-day life?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think mindfulness really is a way of being, really, or more than just a practice. It's a way of living and being in the world, and it's just part of who I am now, really. But I think mindfulness with self-compassion, I bring the two of them together, really, as my practice, and I'd really try and bring it into every moment or as much as I can. I don't always succeed, but it's a big passion, and it's something I really, really aspire to bring into my life as much as possible.
Because this is the thing, Louise, I think a lot of people that have this impression that mindfulness is something that you do, you have to make time for it, you have to be sitting on top of a mountain, listening to plinky-plonky music, but actually you can live a mindful life. So could you give us a little examples of how you integrate mindfulness into your life?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even just there, I was speaking at the Mindfulness in Schools conference, and it was 2 weeks ago there, and the theme was, you know, be kind. So being and kindness in every moment. And you know, there is this misconception that we can't practice mindfulness if we've got busy lives, or if there's stress or difficulty in our lives. But I would myself try and bring it into every moment if I can. And it really is just about stopping and asking myself, I suppose, am I in this moment, am I being in the moment, or am I caught up in my thoughts or in some judgment or maybe wishing it was different or wishing I was different or past or future, and then coming back to beingness, so being with how things are right here, right now. And as important as that, I feel we need to bring in kindness to that as well, so being in the moment but being kind to ourselves in the moment, because often being in the moment can bring difficulty or stress, or there could be busyness, so being kind to ourselves in that. So I find myself are bringing those two, I suppose, qualities together in my daily life. I can be mindful and self-compassionate, even if things are busy or stressful or there's a lot of noise around. And you know, my life is busy as well. So that's what I find myself that works well.
Yeah. And let's talk about young people, because it is worrying. I'm a parent. I work in mental health. And the one thing I hear over and over and over again is the rise of anxiety and depression and self-harm amongst young people. And then, of course, the waiting lists in our health service, and how some parents feel let down by the CAM system. And so there are a lot of worries there, but tell me a little bit about, when did you realize that mindfulness could be the key in helping the young people today take a more preventative approach to their mental health?
Okay, well, I suppose I did study psychology in college, and you know, then I did some play therapy, but I think the key was when I started practicing it myself and I started seeing the benefits in my own life and how much it worked, and I suppose how practical it was. And I felt that it was something that could really, really benefit children, could make a huge difference to their lives if they learned this from a young age, rather than maybe waiting until they did get into difficulty or there was stresses and difficulties in their life. If they knew this skill from day one, it could be there as a tool throughout their life. So I think it was definitely from my own personal experience that's what really I suppose spurred me on to do this type of work. Yeah.
And I think it's a real gift that parents can give their children, because let's face it, when we grew up, we didn't know anything about mindfulness. Having said that, I did grow up part of my life in a Buddhist country, and I was used to in a temples are quiet places where you'd see monks meditating. You know, it was part and parcel of. Buddhism is not supposed to be a religion, it's more like a way of life. I was familiar to that, but who knew that mindfulness, which is like an ancient practice, could be such a solution for our modern day problems?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose mindfulness does come from thousands of years of contemplative traditions, so but how it's taught is, and sometimes people have a little bit of concern around that, they say, oh, is it a religious thing? But it's taken out of that context, and I suppose using the useful part and then teaching that, and all the science does support that this really is something that has so many benefits for us, not just in our mental health but also physically, and even things like concentration and focus. And so it's amazing to see the benefits of it. Yeah.
And for children, having studied psychology, just how important is the emotional well-being of children? Because I get this, because I know our son is going to go to a Steiner school, and the Steiner school is emotional well-being first. Yeah. And academics, achievements come later. So, in fact, I think the average age of a Steiner student to learn to read and write is 7, because they don't see any sense in a 4-year-old knowing how to recite the alphabet backwards, but not be able to actually identify and name the emotions they're experiencing. So there is an element of emotional well-being. If you have that, surely everything else will follow.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the Steiner education system is great. I think there's a lot more perspective there. I think it's about really taking a step back and looking at what's really important in life and in our lives. And for me anyway, I feel like that's happiness or emotional well-being. It's when we look at what people want from all aspects of life, all different countries and professions and ages, we all want to be happy no matter who we are, but yet we don't focus on that. We focus on things like academics. So what I feel that actually children's emotional being well-being is the biggest priority, is what's most important. Because really, when you step back and ask, what do parents want for their children? They want them to be happy. And what the research shows as well, and I think it's just, we can talk about this, but it is also good to look at research as well. And it does show, that children's emotional well-being is the biggest predictor of how they'll be able to function as a healthy adult in the world as well. So there's a lot of research that's shown this now, the importance of children's emotional well-being. It's so important.
And what do you think? Do you think the Irish education system gets that, or are we, there's still some work to do in that area?
Oh, I think there's a lot of work to do in the area. And I suppose that's what I'm really passionate about, trying to create some change there, you know. I think there's huge enthusiasm and huge openness, which is wonderful, to children's well-being and positive mental health. But yet at the moment, I think children are, they, there's half an hour of SPHE per week. That's what is allocated, and it's not enough, you know, and that's meant to cover all sorts, you know. So I think really it needs to change. The system really needs to change. I think there is an openness, and I think things are changing, but I think, yeah, there's a lot more to be done. Yeah.
But today, actually, prior to recording this interview, I had the privilege to be part of the Young Social Innovators Awards, which is in Crow Park. And there's at least 1,000 kids there from all over Ireland, transition year kids, so 15 to 16-year-olds. And one message that came up over and over again when I was talking to these young people from across the country is the amount of pressure that they're under. Pressure of, you know, filling out forms to, you know, what college are they going to get into? Are they going to get the course that they want? And then will they be able to find a job? Will they be able to rent accommodation? You know, so at this very early stage in their life, it would be very easy to kind of let your mind spiral out of control with worry. And I think here's where mindfulness can really help you focus on today.
Absolutely. Like, you know, there definitely is increase in anxiety in today's children and young people, without a doubt. And I think there's a whole host of reasons, but there's a lot more pressure. And then there's the, you know, social media, technology, so much busyness, maybe lack of connection with nature and just being, I suppose. But mindfulness, and I think in particular, I have to say, like, self-compassion, because I would teach mindfulness slightly differently, in that I would hold both of those qualities as just as important. When you bring them together, it can be a huge benefit for children and young people to connect with themselves, to love and accept themselves just as they are, and to be in the moment and enjoy their lives rather than getting caught up in all of this stress. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, you know. All of these things, they're not going to matter really in the long run. It's our health and happiness that matters, really, you know.
Because it's interesting, yeah. When it comes to mindfulness, people think, oh, it's just about, because I always think about Headspace, and which is a lovely app, yeah. Which just says, speaking of park benches, since we're sitting on one, imagine yourself sitting on a park bench and just watching your thoughts whiz by. But I think the piece about self-compassion is huge, because how are the two connected, and how can the two work well to benefit a person?
Okay. Well, again, this just comes from my own personal experience. I suppose I would be practicing mindfulness now for over 8 years, and I suppose at the start I would have just practiced the mindfulness and had parts of the loving kindness and what was there as well. But I felt that I could feel that myself, I felt I was very self-critical, and I could really notice that, and I felt like I needed something else. So I came across a self-compassion, and I felt that that really just changed things for me. So, and then I suppose bringing that into my work in teaching other people, I noticed that it was the biggest thing that everybody was saying. More than anything else, they were saying, I'm so critical, I'm so hard on myself, I compare myself to others. And I think, you know, definitely with like Instagram and all of this kind of huge social media now, that's a big thing for young people, teenagers. They're constantly comparing themselves to other people, or there's all these polished images. So we need to be in the moment, but also learn to accept ourselves in our lives, to be kind to ourselves, and to treat our suffering with compassion, to know that we don't have to be the best, we don't have to be perfect. But it's not about like letting ourselves off the hook or being lazy or that. It's about treating yourself like a really good friend. And for me, that's what mindfulness is about. It's about developing a friendship with our life, with the moment, with the beingness, but also a friendship with ourselves. And that's what mindfulness is for me. So it's what I try to teach the children as well. Yeah.
That's a lovely way of putting it, being a good friend to yourself. Because the reality is, I think most of us will treat our friends with far more consideration and far more respect and care than how we actually treat ourselves. So it's trying to change that. I think it's a really good way of putting that. You know, be a good friend to yourself. So you had all this amazing awareness, and of course you studied psychology. And when did you think, okay, I'm going to go and write children's books? Because that's quite a big thing to do.
Yeah, I suppose it was when I started teaching children's meditation classes, and I was looking for books, and there was very few books, and any books that were written for teachers, really. Now, there was some American books and different things, but I couldn't see any in the bookshops I was going to. So I felt that there really needed to be something for children that they could really relate to and connect with themselves, that wasn't written for an adult or for a teacher, that was written for a child, and that they could take and that they could find some, I suppose, a tool in, or find something there that they could use when they were going through stress or struggle, or when they needed some support. So it was really coming from that. And also, like, when you go into any bookshop and you look in the spirituality section or you know, personal development, there's so many books for adults. It's a huge thing, but there isn't any for children. And I feel like that's the core of who we are. I feel like that's what we should be nurturing in children. So that was why. And it was myself and my friend Rose, who is a wonderful artist. So we worked together, and I would have wrote the stories, and she would have designed the art and drew the pictures. So that was where it came from.
It's a beautiful work, because I think it's very telling that you said that all the books that you found were books that were aimed at adults, teachers or parents, when in reality you need to give this to the kids. And give them something that they can hold in their hands and make their own. So what's that? Let's go through the three books. Well, first of all, It's Always There, because that's about, that concentrates on mindfulness and breathing meditations,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So this is the basic mindfulness of the breath, and you know, the breath is a great anchor for basic mindfulness meditation, because it's always there. So this is something that a child can connect to any time, and once they're focusing on their breathing, they're bringing their focus into the moment, or into that way, I suppose, state of beingness, rather than getting caught up in their thoughts. So a lot of the time is when children get caught up in their thoughts, maybe worrying about a test, or you know, worrying about something that happened in school, that's when they're getting caught up in anxiety and stress. If they can come back to their breath and notice what it's like to be breathing, they're back into the moment in the here and now. So it's a simple, and you know, it's based on that idea of the sky-like nature of mind, you know, that our thoughts are like the clouds, but they're always moving and changing. There's impermanence to it, but then there's always the blue sky underneath, and that's something that we can connect to. So we can connect to that strength or stability within ourselves, even when life can be stressful or difficult.
And just as you're saying that, I'm looking up at that lovely blue sky, and I'm looking at the clouds roll by. Oh, what a beautiful day. So that's the, it's always there. And it's so funny, because I think children have the capacity of breathing the right way. Because
yes,
I look at my kids all the time. It's like I see their bellies rise and fall. And then I look at my belly and I'm like, nothing. It's like you really have to relearn how to breathe properly. Because unfortunately, the way we live our lives, we're constantly, you know, it's always shallow breathing, isn't it? And that's half the problem.
It is. Yeah, it is. But I find a lot of it really is connecting with, you see, it's about connecting with the breath, you know, knowing that you're breathing when you're breathing. A lot of the time as adults, we'd never even notice our breath, because we're just so disconnected. Children are more connected to that way of being. But in saying that, there's so much anxiety. I think it's creeping in, that movement away from the moment creeps in very early now. And it's probably something to do with, again, technology and how we're living our lives, and just the human condition as well. But I do feel we need to teach this to children so that they don't get as disconnected as adults tend to do. So you're right. Yeah.
Because once you lose it, you have to kind of learn. You pick up old bad habits, you know. So it's about trying to keep the good habits there, and maybe because I think, like, if kids learn how to do this now, then, because somebody said to me, you know, look after your mental health like you look after your dental health.
Yeah.
You know, it's simple things that you can do twice a day. Do a bit of mindfulness twice a day.
Absolutely. I can't emphasize that more, because we all have a physical body. We have physical health. In the same way as we have mental health, it's not about something you neglect until something goes wrong. And I suppose, I think we have as a society, I suppose, neglected our emotional well-being, or kind of buried it under the sand, or kind of denied it. But I suppose how we feel, our thoughts and emotions, are the biggest thing for us every day. That's what we're noticing. That's what children are noticing. And, you know, if a child is constantly worried or anxious at school, they're not going to learn anything anyway. They're going to be distracted by that. So we need to just open our eyes to what's actually happening, you know, and to pay attention to how we really are, you know, we're more than just, you know, there's a lot more to us than just the physical body. There's the emotional self, the inner world that we need to nurture and connect to and nourish, I suppose. Not just, yeah, exactly, treating it then when there's a problem, to nourish from day one. That's what I'm mostly passionate about. Yeah
because in the problem, when the problems happen, usually you need external support, and you're very easy to get overwhelmed and think, how am I going to fix this? Or and then you might not have time in your daily life to go off and get support. So before you know it, it's a huge deal.
Absolutely, that's the thing. And I know when I was going to school, there was never a word said about thoughts or emotions. You know, it's just, it was almost as if it's kind of denied or that it's not there. But I think we need to look at it, because, you know, the more we can do this, I suppose that happier children and healthier children and then later adults will be in their lives. They won't have to maybe experience so many difficulties. And, you know, mental health is related to so many other things, like, you know, with issues like, you know, crime and, you know, homelessness, drug, you know, addictions. It might seem like one aspect, but it's related to so much. So I think the effects of this could be massive if we all invested in children's emotional well-being from day one, I feel. Yeah.
That's why I'm very passionate about reporting on social justice and mental health stories.
Yes.
Because the two are very much connected.
Oh, yes.
If we created an equal, a more inclusive society, you know, our mental health issues would probably disappear overnight. Because people would feel respected, they would feel equal, and they would feel, okay, I'm being treated fairly, you know. So suddenly all the mental health issues could actually disappear overnight. So that's one of the reasons why I connected the two on my podcast. So let's talk about this. We haven't even gone to the second book yet.
Okay.
Tell me about the second book.
Yeah, so the second book, again, coming from just my own learning, my own experience, and, you know, I suppose focuses on that issue around self-compassion, but also around, you know, finding a sense of peace and a sense of, I suppose, happiness in the world from inside yourself, not always from external things. So not from maybe, you know, what kind of job you have or what kind of what you look like or what money you have. And I suppose it's relating that into a child's world. So showing them that, you know, what toys they have, or being the best, or, you know, but, you know, being the most popular, that's not always what's going to make you happy. It's believing in yourself, it's accepting who you are, it's being kind to yourself, again, being a friend to yourself. So it's really bringing across that concept of being a friend to yourself and self-compassion, but in, I suppose, a child's language. So that's what I'm trying to get through in that book. Yeah,
that really resonates with me, Louise, because in the last year, at least 6 months, we have been very conscious about, you know, since our daughter arrived, because Phoenix is 3 and Xavier is now 9 months, and I realized, you know, they have too many toys. And to be honest, they're probably a fraction. The amount of toys that they have is still a fraction of what other people have, right? And still, I think it's too much. And I noticed it because when Xavier started crawling, and she started crawling towards Phoenix's toys, he would go ballistic. Because the thought of sharing the toy was, like, for him, like, I could see there was something unhealthy about his relationship with his toys, and I thought it's like of course sharing is something that is hard to learn, but I just felt it was unhealthy. And when we started removing, we haven't removed all the toys, my God, we still have toys, but we have just lessened them. And when we go out to the park, we don't take, like, he used to take a lot of cars with him, little toy cars, you know.
Yes.
Now we stopped doing that. Now when we go to the park, we actually connect with the trees, or we look at the grass, or we pick up sticks and, you know, look at nature. Because I find he was maybe getting the message that, you know, the more you have, the happier I'll be. And then it was just creating I could see an imbalance between him and the other kids in the playground who didn't have toys, you know. And I'm like, do you know what? This is not healthy. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's probably a lot to do with how we live our lives. And I suppose, you know, all of, like, children are bombarded with all these images of this, that and the other. And then as they get older, again, with, like, Instagram, Facebook, polished images of perfect lives. And that's, I suppose, what we're up against. So we need to give a different message as well, that it's not about all those things. And that, you know, that we can, there is a way of finding happiness and peace within yourself. You know, it's nice to have these things. And, like, the book does say that, but they come and go, you know, they come and go. And we think that this thing is going to make us happy, but once we get it, it's the next thing. But I suppose I feel like that by practicing, you know, mindfulness, self-compassion, kindness, that you can actually, over time, develop a happiness, a lasting happiness within yourself that stays, that does stay. So it's about really bringing that message to children from the young age. Yeah.
Because this is the problem with the marketing campaigns that are out there. It's and this is not just to children, it's to adults. It's constantly sending this message that until you have this item, you know, your life is not complete, or you're not part of the group because you don't have the latest mobile phone, or drive the fastest car, or have a house in an affluent part of the city. So it's so like obviously if adults we are absorbing these messages, you know, the kids are obviously going to pick them up from us.
Oh, absolutely. And I suppose we forget, you know, and it's important to say that the children are going to grow up to be adults, you know. And I suppose, you know, it's about creating a happier society. And I suppose, you know, when we look around us, yeah, there is so much of this pressure to be a certain way, and it doesn't really bring any lasting happiness. A lot of it is just for, you know, for other people, or we want to have approval of other people, and we don't often look for our own approval. But if we can give that to children from day one, maybe they'll be a bit more resilient to all of these messages as they grow older. I really feel they will, you know.
Because unfortunately sometimes the message is, or you know, if you do well in class, or if you win enough medals, or you know, whatever trophies, you know, then I love you more. I always think of that song, Alanis Morissette, Perfect, which is such a sad song. If parents actually feel like it's conditional love, then you know you're supposed to love your children unconditionally. So let's talk about your third book.
So the third book then is focusing more on feelings, and it's a way of looking at your feelings, I suppose, and it's a mindful way and self-compassionate way, but of looking at your feelings as visitors. So feelings coming and going. So we've given the different feelings different names. They're like little characters, like angry Angelina and shy Cecil and worried Walter. And the idea is that the feelings come and go. So they visit us for a while and then they go. And we can be kind to ourselves when the feelings come and to visit us, and we can know how to manage them as they come, rather than getting totally afraid of them or repressing them, which we tend to do, you know. So a lot of us as children wouldn't have been, I suppose, maybe encouraged to feel all of our feelings and to understand that they're not going to hurt us, they're part of us, but that we can learn to manage with them as we experience them. And I feel that this has long-term implications even for things like depression, or you know, because a lot of that is when we're told that it's not okay to be sad, or it's not okay to be angry. So we repress these feelings rather than feel them. But feelings are meant to be felt. So this book shows children that, you know, when their feelings come, it's okay to have them. And there's things we can do to help us when they visit, and they will go. They're not going to stay forever. And they're not something to be scared of, or they're not something against us. They're our friends. So that's the message in the book. Our feelings are our friends. Yeah,
and it's so interesting because one thing when my son was turning two, everybody kept saying, "Oh, the terrible twos," you know, and I was like, "Well, what? First of all, can we stop calling them terrible twos? Because I think you're expecting this horrendous thing, and it might not show up, you know." And then you know, obviously, you know, temper tantrums, whatever you want to call them, you know, there are expressions of emotions, and I see it all the time in the playground with other parents, and when the children are expressing the emotions, a lot of parents are shaming them for them. You know, and I am the very first person to say, no, Phoenix, you want to have you have some strong emotions, right? I'm going to stand here by you, hug you, because it's scary. Some of them I can even see he's overwhelmed. He's like, he just doesn't understand where this thing is coming from. But I'm like, look, let express it. Uh-huh. And then after a couple of minutes, it's gone. But I see other parents who are embarrassed, who then they get angry themselves. And then suddenly it's a disaster where it's become a massive a scene where you could just let the child express themselves for a couple of minutes, it would just fizzle out.
Absolutely, that's the thing. And it's, again, like a lot of this is just about normalizing what's happening for us. You know, normalize feelings are part of us as human beings. It's okay to be angry, it's okay to be sad, it's okay to be anxious. But I think, and I know when I was going to school, and I would hear from a lot of other people, that you know, that a lot of us were told that maybe it's not okay to be sad, or it's not okay to be angry, or to, you know, that we have to, or we have to cover it up, or we have to hide this, or maybe women are allowed to feel some things and men aren't allowed, or, you know, and it, so what I suppose what this is about is that all our feelings are okay, and acknowledging them and bringing all of that out in the open and normalizing this with children, normalizing talking about their inner worlds. And then it takes away a lot of all the stigma and a lot of the, yeah, that we create all of these problems really a lot of the time when it's just a natural thing. And if we're open to it and we learn how to deal with them, that I really do feel that, you know, we'd be a lot healthier and children would be healthier as they grow up, you know.
Because one thing I learned is, like, if you repress your emotions and how many boys, for example, would repress their sadness or repress their anger, then that then manifests in violence, either towards themselves or towards the environment. So nobody benefits, really.
Nobody benefits. And I think that is the thing. And, you know, I suppose, you know, typically or traditionally, I'd say in Ireland, you know, I think women were maybe told to suppress anger and men were probably told to suppress sadness. And that doesn't do anybody any good. You know, that just ends up in you know, it comes out, it overflows in different ways, you know, and it's unhealthy, you know. So I think we just need to face up to the reality of how we are as human beings and deal with that rather than try to hide or repress things. It just doesn't work. So
we've talked about how the books are obviously of benefit to children, but tell me, what's the have you heard from parents? Because after all, these parents who are buying these books, or maybe they're getting gifts of these books, and then they're reading them to their children, and perhaps maybe the parents themselves are getting some benefit from it.
A lot of parents have actually said that to me, all right, that they them that when they read it, it was more for themselves. And actually a lot of adults have bought the books, and we have cards as well, and sometimes, like, adults will buy them. I think they work well for like a little affirmation cards. But definitely I think the message is there, and, you know, it has come from my own experience and things that I wish I learned when I was a child, you know. So I think it's a simple message, and sometimes with all these things we don't need to overcomplicate them, because then we can get lost in the theory and we can get lost in the intellectualization of it. We need to come back to what is the core message of these things. And I think that's the same, we're all are human beings, whether we're a child or an adult, so I think it's the same. So we can connect with that simple message, and sometimes that works better than a big long book, you know. So that's a lot of people would have mentioned that it helped them.
It's refreshing to hear psychologists say that it's not about the theory, it's about just bringing it down to basics, you know. It doesn't have to be as complicated as people make it.
I'm really, really passionate about that, about bringing, like, you know, that we need to get away, like, the theory is important, but we need to bring it down to an experiential level, you know. And especially if we want to teach this to children or teach these qualities, you know, it's only going to work if we actually go through them ourselves or have the experience of them ourselves, because then we're authentic in what we're doing and the children know that. And actually it comes true not just in the teaching but in the overall way that the teacher is in the classroom. So I'm very passionate about actually living it rather than just learning it, you know. It needs to be a balance of both, but I would be more on the experiential side, actually living it yourself, because then you'll know how to teach it. It'll be
And tell me, you have to deliver workshops and talks in schools, so how do they go?
I do a mixture of things, but I travel around the country doing workshops for children, and that's all around teaching them skills for not mindfulness as part of it, self-compassion, skills for positive mental health, and a lot of that is through creativity and the arts, so that they connect with that, and that goes very well. And I also do teachers workshops, parents workshops, and then I teach lecture as well in the AIT. So I'll have courses next year, and there'll be specific courses. They're the first ones of their kind in Ireland, and I think the difference is on that experiential part, that you see all these courses for teach mindfulness in 3 days or 4 days and online courses, and, you know, you're not going to be able to get through what it's really about. So these courses, half the year is focused just on the person's own practice, and the other half is on teaching it. So I suppose that's the difference in it, you know. I'm really focused on that. I think that's really important.
And tell me, so what's next for Lulu Rose? Tell me, there's another book in the making.
Oh yeah, there will be more books. At the moment, we've a curriculum written with a friend of mine, and we were working on actually bringing the art together for this curriculum, so that it'll be used for teachers in schools. So that's the next so that it's something that we can really get out there. And be, I think, you see, the thing is, you know, you can do so much on your own, but I think if schools were to bring this in, there's so much access to so many children. And, you know, we've so much time with children each week, and we put so much emphasis on their Irish and English and all these things. I just think, why not give them, you know, at least a few lessons a week on their emotional well-being, or how to handle life, even just, you know, what to do in relationships, stress, you know, things. And these are the things that are really going to matter in their lives. So I really think getting into schools is the big thing. I think that's where how change is really going to happen. That's what I think.
And also, yeah, it'll actually make the classroom experience more enjoyable for everybody, because there's one thing you hear from teachers is like, you know, how stressful the job is and how under-resourced and how underpaid they are. But I really truly believe, like, if any time of the day, if my 3-year-old is beginning to get he's bouncing off the walls, or, you know, we just say, look, can we take a mindful minute? Yes. Can we just pause and just concentrate on our breathing, and we put our hands on our bellies, and the two minutes of that, and then suddenly the calm is restored, you know. So I just think because I've talked about this to teachers before, and some teachers are already doing some elements of it, and some teachers are like, oh, do you know what, this is just too much work, I'm already overworked as it is, do I really need something else to do? But the thing is, it'll actually help them with their own mental health.
Absolutely. And I suppose even just and I can understand why teachers might feel that. And I think really teachers need to be supported more, and there needs to be time aside just for this. They don't feel they have to cram it in on top of anything else. But I feel like, you know, and I would do work with teachers, and like, you know, the teacher's own self, the quality of, I suppose, presence that they're going to bring into the classroom, how they relate to themselves and to the children. The children are going to learn so much just from that. You know, often it's not even what we say, it's just how we are, you know. So, you know, a teacher can be teaching mindfulness from the moment they enter the room. It's not just the time of doing a lesson. It can be just their presence or how they are. The children will learn from that.
It's great. It just sounds pretty. Well, one question for you. Is mindfulness for everybody? Because I know in the past I've heard that maybe someone who's experienced any kind of trauma, serious upheavals in their life, maybe mindfulness might not be the best thing for them, because it might actually let those emotions come up.
Well, it's not recommended for people who have schizophrenia, but what I find is that if you bring in the self-compassion part, that changes it completely. Because if you're just mindful and, you know, you're paying attention and you notice a really difficult feeling in the body, you need to know how to relate to that. But if you teach self-compassion alongside mindfulness, so that's kindness, nurturing, self-soothing, then I think it is helpful for most people, because they'll be able to nurture themselves, soothe themselves in that situation, you know, in that moment of difficulty. So I feel that maybe, I think it's how it's taught. I think if you teach that aspect alongside it, and it's kind of this loving kindness, friendship towards the self, towards the experience, that changes it. So that's what I find myself.
Yes. That's fantastic, Blue. So if people want to find out more about the books and want to buy the books themselves, because I think it's a wonderful gift for anybody. Again, I don't think it's specifically for children. I think anyone could benefit from these books. Where can they get them?
Well, they're in books.
How much are they?
All right. So the books are €8 each, or 24 for the three of them. And they're in bookshops, I think, pretty much bookshops nationwide. But I also have a website where I have a lot of free resources, because I'm very interested in empowering parents and teachers that they can do this themselves. There's lots of guided meditations, workbook pages, art and craft ideas. So that's www.louiseshanaher.com. We have a Facebook page as well, Lulu Rose as well. Fantastic. So, yeah. Yeah,
it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, Louise, and it's just very heartwarming to know that there is, like, in Ireland, there's just people like yourself who saw something that was missing, and thought, you know what, instead of sitting back and letting somebody else figure it out, you're like, no, actually, I'm going to do something about it. I've my friend Rose here, and we're going to create these books. And I have no doubt that these books are making, having an impact in the families that have bought them and are proudly having them on their shelf. Okay. So my thanks. So my thanks to Louise Shanaher and of course Rose Finity, who's not here today, but of Lulu Rose, and of course we are talking about the children's book series. It's Always There. Where is Happy? And Look Who's Here. Deals with emotions. So thank you so much for joining us here on Sparking Change.
Well, we reached the end of this episode. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did putting it together for you. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you like what you heard, please leave us a review. Spark and Change is brought to you by Insight Matters, counseling and psychotherapy services in Dublin City Centre. They support over 400 clients a week with a team of 45 talented and dedicated counsellors. Visit insightmatters.ie for more information. Do get in touch with the show by emailing us on sparkingchange@headstaff.org or follow me on Twitter @DillW or the show @SparkingChange1. A massive thank you to my researcher, Jamie Reynolds, and the fantastic Headstaff team. So that's it for this episode of Sparking Change. This is Dilbert Krimsinger, and as always, reminding you that we're all part of one human family and that you too can spark change.
This podcast is part of the Headstaff Podcast Network.